Hello, and thank you for joining us for this episode of Criminally Listed Presents Into the Killing. If you have a suggestion for a case you want us to cover on Into the Killing, we'd love to hear from you. Just go to criminallylisted.com and click on the Suggest a Case page. We're also looking for stories for our YouTube channels, Criminally Listed and Paranormally Listed. You can submit those stories on the same page. And now, for today's episode, we're going back to early 1991. On January 9th, 1991, Pete Rose, arguably one of the greatest baseball players of all time, was banned from being inducted into the Hall of Fame. He was banned because he bet on baseball games and other sports while he played on the Cincinnati Reds and while he managed them. Since then, there has been heavy criticism because other Hall of Famers include races who enforce segregation rules, wife beaters, steroid users, and other people who arguably did worse things than gamble on baseball games. But 30 years later, the ban is still in place. On January 17th, U.S.-led Operation Desert Storm began when the United States and coalition members began bombing Iraq as part of the Gulf War. Manuel Noriega was a Panamanian dictator from 1983 to 1989. He became rich through drug trafficking. On January 18, 1991, the United States admitted that the CIA and the United States Army paid Noriega $320,000 during his time as president. On January 22nd, the Iraqi forces set fire to the Kuwaiti oil facilities. That same day, a cholera epidemic broke out in Peru. Over 300,000 people were infected over the next year. On February 1st, 1991, the number one song was The First Time by R&B trio Surface. Home Alone, starring Macaulay Culkin, Catherine O'Hara, Joe Pesci, and Daniel Stern, was enjoying its 11th consecutive week at number one at the box office. It would go on to be at top of the box office the following week, and then it would lose the spot to the psychological thriller Sleeping with the Enemy. Holiday, Utah was settled by a group of Mormon pioneers called the Mississippi Company in 1848. It became the first village in Utah outside of Salt Lake City. It's the oldest continuous settlement in Utah because Salt Lake City was abandoned in 1857 during the Utah War. Today, it's part of the Salt Lake City Statistical Metropolitan Area. In 1991, it only had a population of about 14,000 people. One of those residents was 78-year-old Lucille Johnson. Johnson was a widower who lived alone. She was a devout member of the Church of Latter-day Saints. On February 1st, she visited a sick neighbor in the hospital. She then dropped off food to another neighbor who was ill. Then she took her car to the dealership to get serviced, and an employee of the dealership dropped her off at home. The last time her neighbor saw her alive, she was sweeping her front porch. The next morning, Johnson's daughter went to her mother's home. At the end of the main floor hallway was her mother's dead body. A pillow was covering her face. Blood was splattered near her head. 78-year-old Lucille Johnson had died a brutal death. She had been struck repeatedly in the head with a blunt object, and her skull was fractured. All 24 of her ribs were fractured, and her sternum was broken. The cause of death was blunt force trauma and strangulation. A few things were stolen, like a high-end purse, some rings, and necklace, but other items, like her wallet, were left behind. The police found no signs of a break-in or forced entry. The storm door was open, which was odd, according to Johnson's daughter. When Johnson was home, she always locked her doors. Because of the brutality of the murder, the police thought that the murder was personal. Also, Johnson wasn't the type to let a stranger into her home. So the police thought that she knew her killer. One clue that the police found was a boot print on Johnson's chest. The police also thought they had found one more clue. On the living room floor were several dozen pieces of Lego. Johnson had toys for her grandkids, but she wouldn't leave the toys lying out when they weren't there. So the police collected the piece of Lego as evidence. An early suspect in the case was one of Johnson's nephews. She had been giving him money, but she was tired of being expected to provide him with money. So she cut him off. A week after she cut him off, she was murdered. The day after Johnson's body was found, the nephew called Johnson's daughter. He said he wasn't sorry, and he said he wanted to be there when they cleaned out her house because some of his belongings were there. Johnson's daughter thought that this was an incredibly odd and disturbing reaction to her murder. The police investigated the nephew. They compared his boot print to the print found on Lucille Johnson's chest. It was not a match. The police couldn't find any other evidence, so he was cleared as a suspect. The police also considered the possibility that a serial killer murdered Lucille Johnson. That's because she was not the only older woman murdered in her home in the Salt Lake City area in recent years. The first murder happened 9 years earlier, on March 17, 1982. A man kicked down the door of 81-year-old Bertha Hughes. Hughes lived alone in Salt Lake City. The home invader raped and beat her to death. Months later, on August 18, 1982, the body of 72-year-old Wilhelmina Reed was found in her apartment in Salt Lake City. She had been beaten in the head with a blunt object. Several valuable items were stolen from her home. Nearly 3 years later, on July 11, 1985, 69-year-old Thelma Lillian Blodgett was found dead in her home. There were no marks or obvious signs of violence on her body. The medical examiner thought she had a heart attack and died. Blodgett's daughter was sure that her mother had been murdered. She was a vibrant and energetic woman. Plus, her daughter found items missing from her home. She tried to get the police to investigate her mother's death as a homicide, but they refused. They considered the case closed. But 5 years later, a witness came forward with new information. So in June 1990, Blodgett's body was exhumed and another autopsy was performed. It was determined that she had been murdered. She was most likely suffocated with a pillow. 83-year-old Drusilla Overt lived alone in Salt Lake City. She was supposed to call her son on the night of July 17, 1985. He went to her apartment the next morning when he had not heard from her. He found her nude dead body in the bathroom. Initially, it was thought that her death was natural, so her dead body was taken to the funeral home. Employees at the funeral home noticed some odd marks on her neck, so the police were called. Turned out that Overt had been murdered. She had been strangled to death. Weeks later, on August 17, 1985, 88-year-old Ethel Lukau was found dead in her Salt Lake City home. As the morticians were moving her body to prepare her for burial, they noticed bruising on her neck. So an autopsy was performed, and her death was ruled a homicide. 73-year-old Lucille Westerman lived 3 blocks from Lukau, and they knew each other. Westerman had attended Lukau's funeral. On August 23rd, just days after the funeral, Westerman was found unconscious in her bed. Westerman was taken to the hospital, but she never woke up. She died 6 weeks after being admitted to the hospital. The doctors thought she had been suffocated with a pillow. On the day after Christmas, 1985, 79-year-old Jean Murr planned to go to Utah County with her sister and brother-in-law. Her sister called her at 12:30 p.m. and spoke to her. At 1 o'clock, they arrived at her home in Kearns, a metro township in Salt Lake City. Her brother-in-law discovered her dead body. She had been stabbed over 100 times with a pair of scissors. Her car was missing. It was found a few days later, parked behind a business. On October 22, 1989, 71-year-old Flora Rundle was found stabbed to death in her bathroom. Then, 15 months later, Lucille Johnson was found beaten to death in her home. Between 1982 and 1991, nine women all over the age of 69 who lived alone were murdered in their homes in the Salt Lake City area. No one was arrested for any of the murders. The police did have a suspect in some of the murders, but not all of them. The suspect's name was Daniel Troyer. Troyer's criminal history dates back to 1979 when he was 20 years old. He pleaded guilty to attempting to rape a 71-year-old woman who had paraplegia and used a wheelchair. He was paroled in 1982, but then he was quickly arrested for burglary. He was in prison until the summer of 1985. He was released weeks before Drusilla Overd was killed. 2 days after the murder, Troyer went to the hospital because he had a broken hand. Exactly 2 weeks after the murder, Troyer was caught robbing the house of a 7-year-old woman who lived 2 blocks from Overd's home. He pleaded guilty to burglary and he was sentenced to 15 years in prison. He was released again in the summer of 1988 and placed in a halfway house. On August 17, 1988, the day 88-year-old Ethel Lucow was killed, Troyer left the halfway house to apply at a barber college. The barber college was 3 doors down from Lucow's home. Shortly after the murder, Troyer ran away from the halfway house and went to Washington State. But he was arrested and sent back to prison. The police compared his hair and pubic hair to hairs found in Lucow's body. They were consistent. Also, 2 blood types were found on a pillow in Lucow's home. One was AB and the other was type O. Troyer had type O blood. While Troyer would eventually be charged with some of the murders, the police knew he didn't kill Lucille Johnson. That was because he was in prison when she was murdered. And also left 7 unsolved murders. The police worked on Lucille Johnson's case for over a year, and then it was shelved. Over the next several decades, several of the murders were solved. In January 1989, Daniel Troyer had been charged with Ethel Lucow's murder. But 2 years later, the judge ruled that certain evidence can be used against him. This included Troyer's sister's statement that he had asked her to provide him with an alibi for the time of the murder. Also, 2 inmates said that Troyer had admitted to committing the murder. Then there were the results for the hair tests. So the murder charge against Troyer was dropped, but the district attorney appealed. In 1996, the Utah Supreme Court ruled that the evidence could be used. So Troyer was again charged with capital murder. In 1998, DNA testing was done on evidence from Drusilla Overd's crime scene. It was compared to Troyer's DNA, and it was a match. So he was charged with her murder as well. In June 1999, Troyer agreed to a plea deal. He pleaded guilty to the murders of Ethel Lucow and Drusilla Overd. He was sentenced to life without parole instead of being sentenced to death. The police also believe that Troyer killed Thelma Lillian Blaguette and Lucille Westerman. But there wasn't enough evidence to charge him. When Troyer pleaded guilty, he was 15 months away from being released on the 1985 burglary conviction. Then, in 2013, Lucille Johnson's case was reopened. Fingernail scrapings have been saved. DNA testing was done on them, and a profile was created. The DNA was then entered into the FBI's combined DNA index system, also known as CODIS. A match to the DNA was found. It belonged to a 46-year-old man named John Edward Sansing. When his DNA was linked to the murder, John Sansing was on death row in Arizona. On February 24, 1998, while living in Phoenix, Arizona, John called a local church and asked for a food box to be delivered to his home. John's wife, Kara Sansing, was at work when he requested the box. When she came home, they smoked some crack cocaine together. John then told Kara, while their four children listened, that he planned on robbing the person delivering the food box and then use the money to buy some more crack. 41-year-old Trudy Calabrese arrived at the family's home with two boxes of food. In the kitchen, Kara chatted with Calabrese while John signed for the food. Then, while Calabrese was distracted, John attacked her and threw her to the floor. Kara and John tied up Calabrese while their children watched. Calabrese pleaded with the children to call 911. But John told them to go into the living room and watch television. Calabrese cried out, "Lord, please help me, and I don't want to die, but if this is the way you want me to come home, I am ready." John then knocked Calabrese unconscious with a club. He left her on the dining room floor, drove her truck to a nearby business, and left it there. He returned home and brought Calabrese into the bedroom. He raped her while Kara watched. When he was done, he stabbed 41-year-old Tracy Calabrese in the abdomen 3 times with a kitchen knife. He then put a sock in her mouth and put a plastic bag over her head. He then closed the bags with cords and a necktie. John took Calabrese's jewelry and covered her body with laundry. He then met his dealer and exchanged the jewelry for crack. Later that night, John dragged Calabrese's body into the backyard and placed it between the shed and a fence. He then placed a carpet and other debris on the body. At least 3 of the 4 Sansing children saw the body. Meanwhile, Tracy Calabrese was reported missing. The police learned that she had last gone to the Sansing home. The police found the body. John and Kara were subsequently arrested. In September 1998, John pleaded guilty to murder. Nearly a year later, in July 1999, Kara pleaded guilty to murder as well. John was sentenced to death, and Kara was sentenced to 25 years in prison. After John's DNA was linked to the murder of Lucille Johnson, the lead detective decided to interview him. But he decided not to ask him questions about Johnson's murder. Instead, he asked him questions they had no reason to lie about. For example, he asked Sansing where he was living when Johnson was killed and what he was doing for work. Johnson said that he was living in Salt Lake City and he worked at a car dealership. This immediately caught the attention of the detective. On the morning Johnson was killed, she took her car to a dealership to get repairs done. The detective also thought there are possible similarities between Tracy Calabrese's murder and Johnson's murder. Specifically, John didn't seem to mind committing the murder when his children were around. When Johnson was killed, John and Kara had 2 children. Did John possibly bring his family to the murder of Lucille Johnson? If John had knocked on Johnson's door with his wife and 2 kids with him and said they needed help, for example, Johnson probably would have been more likely to let them into her home than a single man. The detective also thought that there might be a way to prove that the children were in the house when the murder was committed. One odd thing that was sitting out at Johnson's home was the Lego pieces. The detective wondered if one of the sensing children played with Lego. It turns out there was a way to prove it. One thing that never changes as we get older is our fingerprints. Fingerprints were found on the Lego pieces. The detective tracked down John and Kira's oldest son, who had been 5 at the time, and got his fingerprints. It was a match to the fingerprints found on the Legos. In August 2014, 23 years after the murder, John Sansing was charged with Lucille Johnson's murder. However, since he was on death row in Arizona, prosecutors in Utah decided not to prosecute him. Investigative reporter Tony Harris interviewed John Sansing for his show, Scene of the Crime with Tony Harris. Sansing admitted to the murder and told Harris the details. John said that Johnson brought her car in for service and he drove her home. He noticed that she was wearing some nice jewelry, so he thought she had money. He was jonesing for some drugs, so he thought about robbing her. John told Johnson that when he was in her neighborhood, he would stop by so she could meet his family. That evening, John, Kara, and her 2 children went to her home. Johnson let them inside, and John asked to use the washroom. He then looked around the house for items to steal. Johnson caught him, and he panicked. He wrestled her to the ground and then grabbed a crystal vase. He said he hit her twice on the head and then stomped on her chest. 55-year-old John Sansing is on death row in Arizona State Prison Complex, Iman, Meadows Unit. In the years after he was connected to the murder of Lucille Johnson, 2 more murders of older women in Salt Lake City were solved. In May 2014, DNA testing was done on the evidence from the murder of 71-year-old Flora Rundle. She was stabbed to death in October 1989. The DNA from the crime scene was entered into CODIS. It was linked to a 56-year-old man named Gary Hilfiger. Hilfiger was serving 5 years to life in the Utah State Prison for murdering his 38-year-old girlfriend, Marsha Haverty. Hilfiger said that when he killed Haverty, he was high on drugs and depressed and was considering suicide. Haverty tried to talk him out of it, and then they started arguing about his drug use. He snapped and then stabbed her in the face, head, and neck 10 times. He then poured kerosene on her body and set it on fire. Hilfiger was charged with Flora Rundle's murder in May 2014. It turned out that Rundle used taxis as her main mode of transportation. Hilfiger was a cab driver and he had driven her several times. A plea deal was made. In June 2014, Hilfiger pleaded guilty and his new sentence would run concurrently with the sentence he was already serving for the murder of his girlfriend. Hilfiger is still serving a sentence in the Utah State Prison. In 2015, the evidence from the August 1982 murder of 72-year-old Wilhelmina Reed was tested for DNA. The results came back in 2017, but no match to the DNA was found. The police started collecting DNA samples for persons of interest in the case. In December 2018, they collected a DNA sample from 55-year-old Brian Harry Reed. In March 2019, the results revealed that the DNA could have come from Brian. Then his fingerprint was matched to a fingerprint left at the crime scene. In December 2019, Brian Reed was charged with the murder 37 years after it was committed. In custody, he confessed to the murder. Brian was 17 years old at the time of the murder. He lived across the road from Wilhelmina with his mother. Wilhelmina went to Brian's home every morning to have coffee with his mother. He said that she had a lot of expensive jewelry. so he decided to rob her. He entered her home through a window and found her in the bedroom. He beat her in the head with a small baseball bat. Sometime earlier, Brian's mother had purchased a plane ticket for him to go to Nebraska. He left Utah on the day of the murder. Brian Reed has yet to go to trial, but he has pleaded not guilty. Out of the 9 murders of older women that happened between 1982 and 1991, 7 have now been solved. The March 1982 murder of 81-year-old Bertha Hughes and the December 1985 murder of 79-year-old Jean Murr are still unsolved and are considered cold. But the police and their family members are hoping, like the other 7 murders, these 2 will eventually be solved. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Please don't forget to check out our YouTube channels, Criminally Listed and Paranormally Listed. But that's all for today. Thank you again for listening. Please take care of yourself and stay safe.